So, something keeps us going on this path. Something keeps it alive for us. Something keeps us turning up at Beta Sangha or at retreats or at reading books. Something is giving us some fire, some power. What is it that's driving us? And this is a really important issue, because if we want to keep going with this, we need the engine, we need the fire, we need something that keeps us going. Now, this is a territory of longing. Kmiha? Is longing? Kmiha? It's the territory of something in us that is unsatisfied with things as they are. This can be very superficial, like many of the teachers just started to practice. They went into a monastery just because they had headaches and they thought the monks will be able to help them with their headache. Others came because of curiosity. Well, what are these people doing? What's this thing called meditation? I want to find out. Others because they had experiences and they didn't understand. They had experiences that they wanted to repeat. Like childhood experiences which are very special and they wanted to kind of repeat them. So these are kind of ways that people begin the search, but it keeps going for us. And it gets more and more subtle what it is that gives us the sense of, in Sanskrit you call it samvega, which is the urgency, the spiritual urgency that keeps us going. What makes us practice? What keeps us climbing the path? Even though sometimes it's difficult, what makes us say, okay, yes, yes, like we heard just now, there is agitation, it's not working for me, I give up. It's all not working because I'm sitting, my meditation is full of agitation, or isheket. So I give up. No, we don't give up. And we just put that also into the picture and carry on. What makes us carry on? And it's a hugely important issue, because many of the greatest teachers will tell you the only thing you really need is that. It doesn't matter what you do. Or it doesn't matter so much what you do, because the only thing that will carry you through is that. Now, we talked about Nisargadatta Maharaj, the non-dual teacher. And when people say to him, you know, what is it that you need? What do I need to practice? He would say, you don't really need to practice, but you just have to be serious about it. That's the only thing you need, is to be serious about the sense of being. And that's all. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha talked about keenness, urgency, drive. And in some way or other, we will gradually understand, and that really, really is important and helps us, that we don't have a choice. We don't really have a choice. Can we go back to either ordinary life in which the most important thing is money and football? Can we go back there? Can we go back to just saying, well, the most important thing in life is survival? Hisardut? We can't go back. We don't really have a choice anymore. The big motivation of the Buddha was suffering. He probably because he was denied suffering, so suffering became for him a huge thing. And it was the power of meeting suffering in the form of the three of the four messengers that propelled him on the path. And for some people that is a huge source of motivation. I'm thinking here of Yael that died, that many of you know, maybe most of you do know her. And she was in last year's course with us.
She was supposed to be in this course.
And of course she was supposed to be in this course. And her path was pretty rapid. She got very far very quickly because she had a very strong motivation. And the motivation was suffering. Suffering is like no more business as usual. Business as usual doesn't work anymore. Business as usual means samsara as usual doesn't work anymore. I can't keep going with this game called ordinary human life with its goals and its desires and its needs, and it creates a real sense of power and urgency. But it doesn't mean to say that that's the only way. And it really, anything that happens can help us on that, to get urgency, to get motivation, to get... suffering is a very classic one. Many great teachers also became, in a way, became very advanced in their road to liberation because they were carrying a lot of suffering. And it was, suffering was unacceptable. It doesn't fit. It didn't fit. And we have a situation where the suffering, in a way, can either destroy us or build us. The suffering, a great suffering, can either really destroy our spiritual life or it can make our spiritual life. And it really, really depends on what we're ready for. And it's, Yael was obviously ready for it. And in some deep way, and it made her spiritual life. Well, others are not ready for it, and it destroys them. So it's a power, but we have to really know, in a way, to let the power drive us in the right direction. And you can think of people in the Holocaust, you know, those that, like Etty Hillesheim, that took the suffering in the direct, as a source of power in their liberation. And others, and most didn't, but many did. And suffering, maybe only some of us are able to do that, to use suffering as a power for liberation. Because many, maybe the majority are drowned by suffering. But the point is that we do need to keep renewing our seriousness or renewed our motivation. We need to keep refreshing it, because daily life does tend to eat away to the farek somehow our motivation for freedom. Daily life can be so full and so much a burden, and you can think of, you know, many mothers who have small children and are sort of day and night serving small children, and they think, you know, I used to be a Dharma practitioner, but I am not, it's all gone because of my children. I don't have time, and I don't know, I'm just serving my children, and so on and so on and so on. And you can really understand that view. It may not be correct, but you can understand it. And so daily life, in the way, especially in the West, can really take down that spiritual energy from us and reduce it. And we need to renew it. And one place to renew it is to remember our basic motivation, our basic understanding that, do we really have a choice? Do we prefer comfort, comfortable living, or do we prefer freedom? What is it that we go for? What's our life for? For being kind of okay and surviving, hitmodudut, or inner freedom and bigness of spirit? And it's a very important quality. The Buddha and had quite a few discussions with Mara. And Mara is the voice of, in this case, laziness, spiritual laziness, atzlanut, saying, don't worry, you can practice tomorrow. Meanwhile, just hang out. Everything's fine. There's nothing to do that much. Don't need to, you know, you've got plenty of time. You can practice another day. It's all right. Everything's fine. And the Buddha said, no! You have to practice as if your hair is burning. But I think that one of the places, not only daily life busyness and so on, but one of the places in us that will challenge our motivation is the sense of hopelessness or despair, or feeling that it's all too much for me, and it's, let the Buddha do it. I'm not the Buddha, leave me alone. And a sense that I can't manage this. This is all too much, this spiritual business. I kind of can't cope with it. And a sense of hopelessness or despair, or expectations that we have that they're not being fulfilled. So we expect silent sittings, and we expect peace, and we expect calm, and then it doesn't turn up, and we're struggling. And this can really reduce our, we can give up. And that is an issue, I think, for everybody, for everyone, every person, every teacher who have gone through what in the Christian mythology calls the dark night of the soul, the place where you're in the dark passageway and there's hopelessness and despair, and we're all meeting places like that. It isn't just because, you know, Christopher or myself are sitting here kind of joking away and saying chokhmot and jokes, and doesn't mean to say that we all haven't known the dark night of the soul. And, so, I think that we need to kind of really address this issue of motivation again and again. Renew it. And one place of renewal is actually the refuges. The refuge of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, which is really simply a refuge in the spiritual journey itself and the truth that appears to us. And if we really begin to understand, that's a deeper home for us. And it's kind of something I keep, for me it's been hugely important, and I keep reminding people who are sitting, feel that the experiences that are more subtle, that are more true, that are more meaningful, are your real home. And that all the conditions that you think is my home are making me comfortable, but are not real home, because they will go and pass. The body that I think I feel okay with now can be in terrible shape tomorrow. It's not a home that you can trust. But the home that you can trust is in the truth of things. So that sense of coming home is a source of motivation, plus a source of pleasure and ease, but it's a source that is with us all the time. I am not putting up with Kazer social agreements, social conventions, social what society says is important, which can be politics, can be religion, can be anything, because my real home is somewhere else, is in the source of things, is in the nature of things, is in the experience of the lived moment. The moment of lived experience is the home. And that gives motivation. So homecoming, it's like people coming out of a wilderness, or people coming out of the Shoah and turning up and making the State of Israel. It's like making a home for ourselves. And that's a huge source of motivation, and in a way, confidence. But there's a deeper place of motivation, which is in the longing itself, in the kmeha itself. The longing itself is telling us something, that we have a place in us that is already there and that wants to find its completion. It wants to find its address, its place. The longing is not stam. The longing comes from somewhere. And you could look on it, your comment earlier about Buddha nature. You can look on it as the Buddha nature in us. That the Buddha nature is expressed as longing. Because we didn't really invent this longing. Longing doesn't really come from the person. That is, from the personality, from me. It ki'ilu comes through me. So longing, in a way, is, in a deep sense, is life wanting to return home, to come back, to unify, to join something bigger. It's the bodhed, it's the life that's locked inside of me, wanting to kind of join the big picture. And there's something cosmic about it, something that, longing itself is a very beautiful movement. As I say, I think it can be seen as a Buddha nature expressing itself. Something coming from beyond us that wants to join with everything else. And through us. And it's so fundamental, this longing. Most of the mythologies of the world, the big mythological stories, the Greek mythology, the Odysseus, the prodigal son, the journeys, they're all journeys, the great mythologies. And even in our dreams, you know, most of us will be dreaming dreams at night about journeys, about traveling, about getting on trains, about going through cities that we don't quite know what they are, and about finding another place, or being lost, and wanting to find our home, and trying to find ourselves, and finding ourselves in strange places in dreams. It's all saying the same thing. It's the longing to longing working through us to find a place of completion, of perfection. And it's the perfection is in a way looking for perfection to join itself through a form called a body or a being or a life. So in some way the longing is telling us we're already there. And that's why it's an important movement. And so that is why the teachers who, even the non-dual teachers who say, there isn't a technique that I can give you, because in a way you're already there, it's just that you don't know it. You forgot it. So I can't give you any technique, because technique is still trying to find something. There's nothing to find. But they all say, stay with it. Be serious. Be with the longing. The longing is the power. Don't lose that sense of the urgency, the motivation, the sense of needing to keep going. I remember I was in California one time, and I was listening to a Zen master who was an old man, and there's like hundreds of people there at Spirit Rock Center. And someone got up and said, well, tell me, Harada Roshi is his name. I get up in the morning and I do yoga, then I do some Kabbalistic meditation with the letters, and then I do Vipassana, and then I do Pranayama, and then I do this, and then, you know, he gave a whole long list of different practices. Is that okay? And Harada Roshi said, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as you practice as if your life depends on it. So it actually takes down, it is in also in the context of what we were talking about yesterday. It's actually not that important which path up the mountain we take. Yes, you know, we can be wise and take this one rather than that one, as I said, working with what's our strengths, working with our personality, working with the karma as it arises, working with opportunities that arise. Fine, fine, all that's fine. But at the end of the day, all paths lead up there. And the only major thing is we have to keep going. And all paths would lead there. I remember talking to Ajay in India. A couple of years ago, I was sitting in India for 6 weeks, and I just had this small little room that was about the size of this thing, or maybe a bit bigger, that's all. I was sitting there for 6 weeks, and every couple of days, Ajay would turn up and visit, and we'd talk together as a teacher. And I once asked him, so what did you, what did you do? What was your practice? And he said, basically I learned from my teacher something, a few things, and he told me to say a mantra, and then he told me to lie down. And so for 4 years, I spent like half of the day saying mantras and lying down. And I lay down and lay down and lay down and lay down, and then it happened. So, you know, you say, well, you know, what's all this lying? Lying down, is that a way to liberation? Well, in his case, yes. That's what happened. Actually, in teachers' retreats, you know them. Some of you know the retreats he teaches, and it's influenced Jaya, who's coming here in May. Jaya and Jemara teach retreats in India, and they teach mostly lying down, because Ajay, that was his way. It doesn't really matter, actually, what we practice. What matters is that we just keep going. And the Buddha encouraged longing up to a point. He really encouraged longing as the best desire to have. He said, if you can replace usual desires, which are based on desires for comfort and protection, and based on the shiryon, survival, that's our normal desires, replace that desire with the desire of longing, and because it's really an important desire. But it has, in the end, a problem, which is longing is always longing for. It's some kind of wanting to become better or become awakened or become. So longing in the initial stages feels very much like I want to be enlightened. And it feels like I want to be, I see this wonderful person, I want to be like him. I see the Buddha, I want to be like the Buddha. And so it's very much longing for something, but we don't really know what that something is. But we still have an image of it, which is based on our ordinary experience. Gradually, that longing still is a desire, it still is in the movement of becoming better or release, but it becomes more subtle. That we're not sure what it is we long for. We're honest enough to say, I don't know what it is that I'm longing for. I don't actually know what awakening is. I don't know what it is I'm longing for. I can't tell you what I want to happen. Even though the Buddhist teaching is full of avnei derech, of milestones, of arhant, and once returning, and seven times returning, you know, kind of loads and loads of milestones and maps and, you know, of the journey. But leave that aside, I still don't really know what it is that I'm longing for, but I know that that there is in me a commitment to freedom and to a journey. And a journey seems the journey that's worth taking in this life. So that's a more subtle place of longing. Still the longing, still the urgency, still the sense of motivation, still keen energy. But the Buddha said, slowly, slowly, that can go as well. And you don't really, in the end, need it, because it's still a kind of desire for. And in the end, it can go. Because in a certain place, the whole thing has taken you over. You're not anymore, you don't really need the longing that much, because the path is taking you anyway. The Dharma is taking you anyway. The Dharma is working through you. It's just happening. So you really don't need that longing. But that perhaps is quite a high place, and I think for most of us we do need to renew our longing, to renew our, and remember our motivation, to explore our motivation. Touch it. And when we feel it's not there, feel the pain of that. Feel that something is lost, something I need to get back, or I need to renew, and then find a way of doing it. Usually, it's one of those places, like exploring helplessness or despair, if we feel that the whole thing isn't working for us. Explore that as, in the present moment, as an experience of resistance and not as a truth, for example. If we feel hopelessness or helplessness, feel it as an experience in the present moment and not as truth. Exploring ways of, again, finding our home. Where is my deeper home? Exploring ways in which we really find our suffering is really dealt with, fundamentally dealt with through the Dharma, and letting that touch us, and really letting that talk to us, and thereby renewing our motivation. So we do need to pay attention to motivation, because it's the thing that drives the whole journey for us, and it's one of the primary equipments that we need for this journey. So let's take a moment just to reflect.